Welcome to PJEFC's Pulpit Ministry, a ministry that is committed to the preaching of the Word to transform life.
All right, good morning, everyone, and thank you for this opportunity. I started thinking back, my affiliation with PJEFC actually goes quite a long way. Although I have never actually worshipped with y'all in person, but
When we first started Pusat Injil Kelana Jaya many years ago, this is a few of us from Bangsa. We decided that we want to help the East Malaysian communities. And so we set a small fellowship to worship and pray with them and also do Bible study with them. And that led to a church that was formed in Kelana Jaya. And our founding pastor was a person from PJEFC, actually, Pastor Alfred Thais, who partnered with us. And then a couple of years ago, maybe now 15 plus years, Chien and I, we set up Wawasan Penabur. And then now, another ministry that I'm very, very heavily involved in, Global Leadership Network, Rachel Chow, is actually running the whole that ministry. So a lot of affiliation with PJFC. Maybe we'll just throw my slides out. And I was very surprised when Pastor Alexa asked me and said, hey, come and speak on parenting. I'm like, you sure or not? I'm a young parent, you know. I have teenagers, which is the worst time to be a parent in the history. Actually, looking back, actually the early days are tough, right? Because all the crying and all, but teenagers have a whole different set of issues. But I'm going to talk today about living faithfully by building up the future. And you know, one of the stories that I'm very reminded of is many, many years ago, I was listening to I worked at a company called NBC, which is a TV company in the US, and NBC Universal. So I was in New York, and they were interviewing. I happened to be in the studio, and they were interviewing an architect, and they were talking a lot about all the different buildings in New York that he and New York and Chicago and many other places that he had architect and designed, and the journalist was asking him all kinds of questions, and then it came to me, what is your biggest achievement? You know, and we thought like the answer would be this building because it's so magnificent and so on. But he said my biggest achievement was to bring up my two kids. And then we're like, huh? then the guy was like not satisfied, like the journalist. So he's like, wait, but you know, these buildings are magnificent. I mean, they stand for centuries. They define the skyline of the city and so on and so forth. You know, surely one of this is bigger than parenting. And he looked back, he said, buildings are important. And I remember he said, they provide shelter, they inspire awe, they contribute to the economy of the city, but my children, they have the potential to do so much more. They can show kindness to others, they can create, they can innovate, they can change the world in which a building will never or shed can never do, right? And that, I mean, I wasn't a parent at that point in time. I was a young man, but I remember that, and I'm like, wow, parenting so tough. Parenting is the biggest achievement. Wow. But as I started delving in, and I spent many years, my first actually real interaction with the power of leadership, parenting, and all these things was my first coach. So in the 80s, right? In somewhere in the mid-80s, I was playing football. I saw this fat, not so good-looking man called Diego Maradona win the World Cup. I was very inspired. If this guy so short also can win the World Cup, surely I can. So when I was 10 to 6, I couldn't play football, never played, but I made a resolution, I'm going to play football. Worked really hard. In a year, I made it to my school team. So Form 1, I was in my school team, and Mokhtar Dari was chosen to be my football coach. And I remember my experience with Mokhtar. If most people, they see it, they'll say, oh, Mokhtar, horrible, horrible, horrible person, because he treated us if y'all watch a lot of these soccer coaches or even teachers, right, the nasty teachers that push you, that whack you, that force you to do things you hate to do, right? Wow. 20 years in life, 20 years later, you say, oh, those were the good teachers. But when they were doing that, you say, bad teacher. Ayo, the other teacher better, the one that never bothers about us and give us free period, right? But when you go back, and I remember this, when I go back to my, when I went for my 20, 30 year school reunion, we always talk about the good teachers as the one that pull your ear, give you roti canai, which is the smacking your side and so on, as the good teachers and the ones that didn't care. So Mokhtar Dari was one of those, during that time, horrible coach. But you look back and say, wow, if not for him, I probably would not have become who I became. Because you go for training, after 2 hours, you show vomit one. And he was especially nasty to me because I was Form 1. The other kids were between Form 3 and Form 5 in the school team. And he would say, "Roshan, you mistake, go run 20 laps, go run 50 laps, go run this," right? And I was very frustrated because during game time, he never played me. It was always the other guys because obviously like, they're better and they're older. And it was very frustrating, right? You work so hard, but you never get to train. But his influence, I remember one conversation I had with him because I was very angry. And he called me after training, said, "Roshan, come talk to me." And he looked me and he said, "Look, why are you so angry?" I said, I started getting worked up. Then he said, "Look, I have one question for you." And he asked me this question, "Do you think I'm talented?" I stopped, I looked at him and said, "What do you mean talented? Of course, you're Mokhtar Dari. You're the best player in Malaysia. You're the best." And then he looked at me, he said, "Do you know I'm not the most talented footballer in Malaysia? There's other guys, all these, that Zainal Fella, that this," and he started naming people. And then he looked at me, and he said, "But you're right, I became the best. And you know why I became the best? Not because of talent, no. It was absolutely because I work harder than everybody else. That's why I make you work so hard. That's why I push you. When I ask you to run 20 laps, you run 20. Other people, I run 20, they sometimes run 15, they say they're done." Right? And I was thinking, don't know if he's telling me I'm stupid or not, but I just like, why you follow instructions on? But his influence, right, was significant. Because it made me hardworking, it made me push, it made me always believe that I can do anything. Because 2 years later, I started playing for KL. And I said, "Wow, this guy at the time wearing spectacles, a thin, scrawny guy, really no way." But because he instilled in me the belief that I can do it, if I push myself, it made such a difference. And it led me really to understand what leadership was, right? And I spent a lot of time trying to figure out, wow, because Mokhtar keep challenging, "Be a leader, be a leader, be a leader. You, even though you're the youngest, you're the leader. Go and do it." And it gave a lot of confidence, And so I spent 20 over years, maybe 30 now, 40 years, trying to figure out what this whole thing of leadership is about. And one of the interesting things, and you may be able to see, but it doesn't matter, We started for the last 20 years studying leadership and we found something very interesting. We took a lot of things and pulled it together. Every single research we could find on leadership, we pulled it together. And we found things that were very interesting. For example, the last line is called critical events. When something bad happens to you, right, you have a few ways to react to bad things. And trauma and stress is very bad for kids below 12, but it's actually not so bad when you're above 12. But it's only good if you worked on the first part, which is your character. And character, there's three types of character. There's moral character, which we teach, how to be good, how to have integrity, how not to cheat, and so on and so forth. But there's also performance character. And performance character is the ability to perform the character of performance. So character like self-control or willpower or character like conscientiousness. Even though nobody's watching, you still do. You still work very hard, right? And then there's a third character called intellectual character, which is your belief. "Oh, I'm Malaysian. We are Malaysian. We are lousy lah. Come on, how to compete with these Europeans and Americans and this and that?" That's intellect, no? It's not real. Now, depending on that, right, a crucible moment is something bad that happens. Some people will use the crucible moments and it will inspire them to have vision and say, "Oh, I want to fix this, I want to correct this." But some people, when a bad thing happens, depending on their character, they will say, "Ah, I'm so unlucky. God is so bad to me. Oh, this, oh, that." And then they go down and spiral downwards into a tunnel that then makes them into somebody very different. And all these things, right, as we start looking at character, another big piece, right, secure base, all these things is related to parenting. The huge foundation of leaders, of leadership, the first 12 years is really about parenting. The next 12 years is a different style of parenting, but it comes to your coach, your friends around you. And then as you go older, it becomes your bosses and so on that define who you become. But parenting is so important. There's this concept called secure base. And what a parent needs to be is a secure base for a child. That means the child feels a lot of security. That's why they can be naughty. Because when they feel very secure in you, they'll be naughtier. Because there's a secure base, I can always go back to my parents. And when they're naughty, actually they're not naughty, they're curious. They experiment, they try new things. But they always have the secure base. Likewise, Mokhtar was a secure base. Or your first coach, or your teachers. Really good teachers become secure bases. And so on and so forth. And I don't wanna harp on this whole thing, but one of the biggest insights as we looked at this whole science of building leaders is this insight that actually leadership and parenting, and I'll talk a little bit more on parenting, is actually very contextual. Now, what's contextual mean? Contextual means this, you know. It means not balance, you know. And many times people say we must be balanced. But actually, it's wrong, you know. Balance is actually not a very good thing. And here's why, right? If you look at leadership, right, there's different dimensions of leadership. Let me ask you as a church, right? Which do you think is more important for a leader? To be humble or to be assertive? What do you think? Huh? Okay, which one is more important for a leader? To never give up or quit? To persevere or just give up? Sure. Okay, which one is more important for a leader? To be big picture, strategic, visionary, or to be in the details, get things done, execute? Huh? Contextual, was so clever. Actually, the answer is both, right? The answer is sometimes, you must be like Nelson Mandela, 27 years, fight, 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 never give up. But the moment become president of South Africa, he quit after one term. Not like some folks, 22 years, don't want to quit, right? Plus 22 months, plus this, and so on and so forth. But the person that knows, the great leaders know when to fight. They know when to quit. They know when to be humble. They know when to assertive. And it's not, you sometimes a bit humble and a bit assertive. No, it's 100% humble when you're supposed to be humble, and 100% assertive when you're supposed to be assertive. And if you start looking through all of it, right, whether it's street smart, and I'd say there's 50 over dimensions, you know, and I call this dimension paradox. Sometimes you show love, sometimes you fear, sometimes you discipline, sometimes you don't. Sometimes you're visible, and I'll talk a little bit about this. Sometimes as a leader, you need to be invisible. Sometimes as a parent, you need to be visible, very visible, but sometimes you need to be very invisible. Sometimes you need to listen, sometimes you need to talk. But everything is related to the context and the situation. Sometimes, and this is the best leaders, you know, break rules, you know. You break rules. But many times when you break rules, you go to jail one. But when do you break rules? And you start to see people like Sony would have closed down if not for Ken Matsumoto, who refused to listen to his boss. Don't work on PlayStation. He just went and did it anyway on the side in the garage. And he broke so-called the rule of the office. But when is the right time? Jesus also knows. And these principles actually all come from Jesus. So our study of what we call contextual leadership was based on this man called Jesus. And we found, he just take a whip and whack the temple and throw things because this is my father's house. But sometimes they say, pay tax, pay lah. Nah. It's very important to pay tax. Keep the rule. How do you know when, which is the big question, right? Sometimes we continue to be hold people accountable. We have high standards. But when is it that we graciously forgive? Right? And this is the dichotomy of leadership, right? Because leadership is very contextual and related to different space. But let's talk about parenting, right? I think it's exactly the same because parenting is leadership. The father and mother in a family are leaders in their family. And so we are also in this paradoxical space, you know. And I'll walk you through some of the parenting paradox, right? Because it seems, what, really? How do we do this and this at the same time? You know, when I was working at NBC, 1997, I remember this, two women died. The first one was a lady called Princess Diana. And I was in NBC News, the news division. And we were fourth place in the US. There's only four news networks. So when you're number four, you know where you are. So you had ABC, CBS, Fox, and us, right? So I was in NBC. I was the CFO for the news business, right? The NBC News, our news and sports at that time. And Princess Diana died, and everybody was sending crew. They were sending crews to the UK to cover her death because, a lot of scandal. But we all know money, you know, because as CFO, no, we cannot send. What we do is, when other people say, breaking news, we just copy and say, breaking news back. Easier, save cost, all right? That's what good CFO does that. But when 1 week later, Mother Teresa died, and we decided to send a crew there. And it was a very good decision because at that point, we became number one in the US. And for whatever reason, for the next 6 months, we remained number one. My only conclusion is Americans, when they have a remote, they change the remote, then they lose the remote, then they don't know how to change channel. So I don't know what's the real reason we stayed number one, but that happened and made me very popular at that time. But one story from Mother Teresa really resonated with me. And Mother Teresa, right, every day she goes and asks for free food for her ashram, her orphanage. And one day she went, and there was this Indian man who was manning the, whatever, it was a bakery, or I can't remember what it was, or a restaurant. And he thought, wow, white woman coming to ask me, coming to buy from me. Wow, my lucky day, right? Then she go in and she very politely explained her ashram, and actually she needs free food. This guy got very angry, you know, got very worked up, you know. And he straight away, boom, gave her one tight slap. Now, your first reaction, what would you do if you were Mother Teresa? Quick, 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 your first reaction. Shout out, huh? Slap back. Wow, PJFC, very loving church. Okay, what other reaction? What else would you do? Turn the other side, because we are in India, right? Gandhi, right? You slap me on the right, please slap me on the left. Right? Okay, any others? Huh? Ask why. Okay, ask why. What else? What else will you do? Walk away. Okay. Cry. Okay, Ken, you can do all that, right? My sister didn't do any of that, no. You know what she did, no? She put her hand here and very humbly went to the man and said, sir, thank you for the slap. I deserved it. I shouldn't have asked you for free food. But you know, my children really need food. Well, then she started getting very aggressive. Please, you better give me my free food. Blah, blah, blah. Wow. Got really aggressive, ask you for food. Bam, second slap. Second, sir, thank you so much for the slap. I really deserve it. I know I shouldn't ask for free food. But you better give me my free food. Wow. Again, third slap. Same thing, she did it. By the third time, the guy started getting very angry. You know what he did not? He started gathering food, you know. And he pushed it aside. He said, woman, take this food, get out of here. I never want to see your face again. Go, 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 get lost. She got her food. Which was her intention. You step him back, you get your food, not? You walk away, get your food, not? So what was so interesting about this, she knew how to be humble and assertive at the right time. Wow. Right? So as I was reading this story, I realized that the ability to know when to do what is very critical. It's extremely critical. And I want to talk a little bit about this thing in parenting. Because as parents, right, one of the most challenging times today is the time we live in today. Because, especially in the US, my sister just came in a couple of days in from the US. Wow, very susah. Because, gender also got problem, you know. He, her, she, what, don't know what, it also got. It's like very confusing, right? And these are, and the reason why we are in these times is because if you look at history, if you look back in history, let's say you go back to 1890, just take yourself back to 1890. Got no electricity, right? Got no light bulbs. 1990, right? Got no cars. Got no what? No radio, no TV. Nothing, right? Just 100 plus years ago, right? Now, suddenly, between 1890 and 1920, 1915, 1920, radio, TV, telephone, aeroplanes, 1903, with Orwell and Wilbur Wright. Wow, cars, all these things suddenly came, you know. And these are good things or bad things? Good. Technology, good or bad? Cars, aeroplanes, good. Okay, but when if you were there 120, 130 years ago, you'd be like where we are today, right? You say, ooh, this devil one, no, this car. This cannot one, cannot replace horse one. This one. And the dialogue at that time in the church was that dialogue about how technology, evil one, no. But that's not the issue, no. The issue is because there were no standards, you know. It was what we call transitionary times. So because there were no standards, because we don't know, is the standard car or horse? Is the standard this or that? What is the standard, right? And so everybody was using things. And because there were no standards, it was what we call transitionary times. And transition times is the in-between, you know, between the old ways and the new ways, there's a period in between. And you know what happened in 1915, there was World War I. 1919, they had the Spanish flu, their version of the COVID pandemic, right? In the 1920s, they had a Great Depression. In the 1930s, they had World War II. Until 1945, until United Nations came in 1948, where they said, okay, WHO, take care of health. You take care of children. You take care of this. They set standards, you know. Geneva Convention is how we fight. They set certain standards so everybody can play by certain rules. Then the world started to have peace. Now today, right, from 1990, since 1989, the Berlin Wall collapsed, till today, right, we've had the World Wide Web, we had this, now we have artificial intelligence, we have generative AI, we have all these new things, blockchain, so many things have happened. The problem is, we are not in the new space yet. We are not, no. We are actually in a world with no standards. Because you also don't know, are you buying Bitcoin? Ringgit, are you Ringgit Malaysia? or US dollar or what? You also don't know, right? All currencies seem bad. Ethereum. We have no standards on anything because everybody is trying. It's a world in transition. But even in a world in transition, we are supposed to lead. We are supposed to be good parents when there's confusion and there's no standards. Right? So how do you do that? And I give you this context because even if you look at the Industrial Revolution, it's not one revolution, no. It's three revolutions happening in one. There's actually a digital revolution, which we all talk about, but nobody talks about the physical one that's changing. The 3D printing, the driverless cars, and all these other things, the robotics, and so on, and the biological one. The works of David Sinclair and all these guys, they're doing stuff, the genome mapping projects, and a whole bunch of other, three different things happening at the same time. All boom, 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 no standards. So how are we supposed to lead in a world with no standards in these transitionary times? Knowing what does transitionary times always? Transition times always lead to chaos, disorder, war. Always. Because you don't understand it. Governments don't understand it. Leaders don't understand it. The easiest thing to do is fight lah. Don't resolve. Resolution is a lot of work. War is easier. Just why fight lah. Right? To them lah, right? And so you are caught and we get confused, you know. I always tell my friends, I say, hey, you know, this technology, this whole thing about technology is dividing parents and children a lot, no? Because you see, your kids, many of them grew up as digital natives. And we as parents, don't use your pet. Hey, stop using, we start scolding them, right? And you know what's happening or not? We create fear, you know, because we are so fearful, right? We as parents become fearful of technology. Right, and fear is a bad word in the Bible, right? God doesn't like fear, no. But Satan knows how to cleverly create fear to create this wedge or divide between parents. Technology lah becomes the wedge that is, oh, parents and child start to fight because we fear technology. But we forget, you know, if you think about the periods where the church grew the most, right? Do you know when the church grew the most? When the church was the forefront of technology. In about 600-700 years ago, there was a guy called Johann Gutenberg who created the printing press. And he's a Christian. And you know what's the first book he printed? The Bible. Which caused Martin Luther and all these other guys to have access to the Bible, which caused that whole movement because everybody had access to Bibles. And then guess what? Because they had access to Bibles, the Christians started universities. They started schools. And then when missionaries came to Malaysia and other countries, they started schools. And we were the forefront of education. We were the forefront of technology. But today, our response is the other way. No, ChatGPT and new generative AI stuff, not driven by Christians one, you know. It's not. And I keep saying, hey, something wrong here. We should be driving technology. We should be embracing it. We should be finding new ways to reinvent education, to reinvent all these spaces using technology. Because the church has always been the forefront of technology. It's the Bible, you know, who said the world is round, you know. And so on and so forth. A lot of scientific. In fact, one, you know, I was talking to David, this Danny Kim, who's coming to Malaysia. He's a Christian guy who put some device on top of the international space. He convinced NASA to put a device there so children can do experiments in space. Right, and he did it for a Christian school. So he's coming down to KL in January to speak at our Global Asia Summit. And I was having a chat with him. And one of the things he kept saying is that if we continue to be the forefront of technology, if we drive it, we can drive it according to the agenda that God wants and that God has laid on our hearts and the values that we have. But when we don't, then we are conforming to the standards of the world, right? So that's what. But here's the thing, the scary part. No, fear is used a lot by Satan. Because there's an opportunity. We are not forefront of technology. We don't know what it is. We don't know how to consume it. But our children know or think they know. And this happens. A couple of verses I want to share at this point, right? And it says, you know, finally, brothers and sisters, whatever is true, whatever is noble, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is admirable, if anything is excellent or praiseworthy, think about such things. Technology is one, you know. It's actually good, you know. But it can be used in the wrong way. Then our role is, I have the right to do everything you say, but not everything is beneficial. I have the right to do anything, but I will not be mastered by anything. And I think this is where our role as parents are so critical with technology. Technology is great, but our role is start your children off the way they should go. And even when they are old, they will not turn from it. We have a parent, we have a responsibility to understand technology, understand it deeply, and enable our children to leverage it in the right way. This is technology, but I want to talk a little bit more on the paradox. Because this whole paradoxical parenting, in this new age, in this complex age, is tough. It's very tough. And the answer is, it depends, you know. So it's going back, you know, in the old days, you hate it when your university professors, whenever you ask them a question, they always look at you and they say, it depends, with a smile. Give me the answer, lah. Why is it depends? I just need an answer. Oh. And if you start looking at paradox, and you need to understand what a paradox is. Paradox is this, you know, something very contradictory, right? But when you investigate and when you find it, that it seems to be incongruous, but actually it can be congruous. It can be integrated. It can make sense to do both. And we find Jesus a paradox, you know. Sometimes he's alone. Sometimes, hey, we want to be together. Why? Don't chase them away. Come. Hey, I thought you want to be alone. Why suddenly like that? Sometimes you, wow, wait, don't fight. Why you can't say, let's heal him. Wow. Why get captured? Sometimes want to get captured. Sometimes, no, let's walk this side. Wow. It's like, I don't understand you, Jesus. You're like this and that and this and that. But he understood his mission. He understood his purpose. He understood where his timing was. He understood a lot of things, you know. And this is where it's very important for us to understand the context so that we can play in a world of paradox or we can be in a paradox. I'll give you one parenting paradox, which I find a tough one. We love our children a lot, right? And I've seen parents go both ways. Because just now, very interesting, this morning before coming, I just took, because my nephews and nieces are down here from the US, so I took them without just me and my kids and them, and we were talking. And we were talking about, you know, don't know why they started to talk about, oh, my sister is very strict, you are like this. They were analyzing my parenting style and my sister's parenting style in front of me, you know. So I was like, wow, these kids nowadays, very, very brave. But interesting, listening to their dialogue between them. And here's the thing, you know, we feel that we need to be gracious to our children. We need to extend grace. When they make mistakes, extend grace, right? But at the flip side, we also know God also holds us accountable, you know. When David sinned, we'll talk about David in a bit. When David sinned, right, he was held accountable for his sin. With Bathsheba, with Uzziah, and all these other things. When he did something, he was held accountable, you know. And sometimes we tend to forget, you know, you actually can have both. You need to extend grace and forgive them for their mistake. But you also have to hold them accountable for the things that they did. And we tend to forget sometimes either. Sometimes we go the other extreme, only hold them accountable, and they feel that no grace has been extended to them. The other times we are so gracious that they feel, I don't have to be accountable for the things I do. And you see, when we don't extend grace to others, we communicate to them that we expect perfection, which is unrealistic and fosters an environment of fear and shame. But grace does not cancel out our responsibility or accountability for the things God has given us. When my son does something wrong and break his hand, we can laugh at him and say, ha, 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 who asked you to go and break your hand? You can extend grace, but you can say, yeah, who asked you? At the same time, in a way that doesn't make them irritated, angry, and so on. Many times he says, parents, don't irritate your children. Actually, he says fathers, especially. Mothers, I think, are nicer. But two ways, and I'm going to talk about the how, right? The way to do this, right? Sometimes you have to have this tough conversation with children. The way to do this is with two ways. One is compassion. Make sure they know that you're talking not about them. You're talking about the behavior. Hey, yeah, you're always like that. No, that's not. It's about the behavior. It's about not devaluing them as a person. It's about the issue. Hey, you're always late. You're tardy. Your thoroughness, your skills, whatever it is. It's about that one thing. But the other thing is be clear and say, hey, but you did this, you know. And you know there's a punishment. You know there's a repercussion. You know there's an accountability. And there's clarity. Because sometimes we extend grace, and then you know how we communicate. We talk like long story, you know. So let me ask you, when you talk to your children, and anybody, let's say I talk to Chien. If I talk, conversation, I'm not talking about talking here. I talk conversation, supposed to be a dialogue. Dialogue means two people talking. How many sentences can I talk until Chien stop? Chien, how many sentences do you think Chien heard me? My maximum. What do you think is the number? Tian, anybody lah. You so lah. Talk to you lah, Alexa. How many sentences me and her having, Reverend Alexa, having a conversation? How many sentences I talk? How many sentences until Alexa, how many sentences you think Alexa can remember what I said? One. I think her capability a bit higher lah. Give her credit lah. After she'll take the accountability. Okay. So human beings, we can remember 3 sentences. So if you go 12, 15 sentences, they remember the last 3 or the first 3. Everything you say in between. So when you talk to your children and then you say, I told you already what? Before I told you, right? They only remember the last 3 or the first 3. Where go you say? You didn't say one. And then you say, but I told you. But you have 20 sentences, you know. Because you know when you get angry, you say sentence, and then you blah, 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 until you're 12 sentences. They cannot remember. I also cannot remember. No human can remember. That's why if you study hostage negotiations, right? The hostage negotiator always talk 2-3 sentence question, 2-3 sentence question. There's a reason why they do that. Because the other side can remember only 2-3 sentences. Either the front or the back, lah. They either remember the first 3 and then they shut off, or they remember the last 3, lah. Because our capability as human beings to remember and listen is limited to 2-3 sentences. So, clarity is important. We all talk, and then in between we talk about the issue, and then we do the sayanging, right? We do what we call the compassion sandwich, right? Good stuff, you whack them, and then you put a... They don't remember the middle at all. So you say, where got you told me? Where got you said this? I remember you said the good things, and then you said the good things. I remember last and first. Wait, good. But check yourself, lah. Most of us are like that one. We sandwich ourselves with good, the bad, and then the good, right? Generally, lah. But clarity is very important. Just say straightforward, lah. And dialogue, lah. Dialogue means, you talk, they talk, you talk, you talk. No, it's one way. One way is monologue. So you tell your child, I'm going to have a monologue with you, which means I talk, you just listen. Then they understand. But you say, let's have a conversation. Then they say, where I got converse one? Only you talk. That's a monologue, right? So be clear, lah. If you have compassion and clarity, a lot of things change, one. In the way you communicate with your children. The biggest failure, I think, in the Bible, lah. I don't know, lah. I think, lah, of parenting. You can talk about Eli also, lah, maybe. But David, horrible, no? As a father. Human being also, lah, kill people to take his wife and so on. But you see, his daughter, Tamar, got raped by his son. And then, you know what he did? Nothing. And so the other brother, Absalom, get angry. My sister! Wow! Which spiral into Absalom kills Anon. And then you know what he did? He grieved for both of them. Oh, Absalom ran away. Oh, I grieve for Absalom. I grieve for this. But what did he do? Where's the accountability? Loss of grace. Zero accountability. And then, Adonijah declares himself as a king. Why would he declare himself as a king? Obviously, David never had conversation with any of his kids. He did zero parenting with any of them. And he doesn't go and step up and rebuke him, you know. He said, okay, we do a side deal. Solomon, you go, come, you do this on the side here. And of course, Solomon then takes revenge. And so on and so forth. You got all this crazy story, right? But it's all parenting, you know. Firstly, don't have so many wives, lah. I mean, that's one lesson, lah. Second, don't have so many kids, lah. With so many wives, lah, right? But then, if you do, they are your responsibility. Because this is how things happen out of control, you know. It's when you don't extend grace, or you can extend grace, which is all we all do. Where's the accountability? Where's the punishment? Where's the rebuke? Where's the intervention? When something goes wrong at the early stage, imagine if he intervened with Tamar and Anon. Settle that issue, Tana. Amen. And now you're going to get punished. This is what's going to happen, and so on and so forth. I don't. Maybe the rest of the thing may not spiral into where they're. But we don't understand. No, we don't understand. Little things we do when they're young have significant repercussions when they're older, and we cannot change that really. But it's very critical. And you know, we talked about visible. Another paradox, right? Sometimes, you know, at the early stage in a child, we need to be very visible. We need to take care of them. Ayo, it's the most ridiculous period, right? Every hour they want you. They cling to you. They want to hold you, right? But I think this way, so we get so used to that, we forget somewhere when they become teenagers, we need to start letting go a bit, no? They don't need so much direction. They need a little bit more delegation. They don't need more telling, no? Cannot tell them anything already. Forget it. We need to show through our behavior. We need to ask. We need to explain. We need to enable. We need to empower. And then when they're adults, well, I see, still got no parents. A lot of them come and interview. Parents come and interview with me one for their children, for jobs. First time in their life, no, I see in the last 5 years, oh, yo, so many parents will be the one writing the letter. We have, like, very interesting. Oh. Parents are doing the interview for their children. Oh. How? Huh? But it's time to let go completely. Your job is to support. Be that shoulder. But we forget, no. We want to continue to do that. Sometimes we are opposite, no. When you're young, hey, don't go away. We don't want to do that direct interventions. And then later, we want to replace it and say, oh, last time I was young, I didn't spend time, now I want to spend time. There's a phase one, you know. There's a context for everything, you know. And when you're a visible parent, it's about inspiring your children. Your child grows in confidence. You become a model for them. Your child believes in you. You give your child an example. This is when you're very visible. When you're invisible, it's about the time for you to empower your child. Your child grows in their ability, not yours. You become a mentor. Your children begin to believe in themselves. You give your child an experience. You move away from being an example to giving them experiences and allowing them to do stuff. Sometimes I think I overdid it. I let them do things too young, you know, 6 years, no, 9, 8 years old. Go yourself. Go to the camp yourself. I don't care. To my daughter and so on and so forth, right? Which has different repercussions. Now, like, I don't want to go camp. I don't like camp. And so on and so forth, right? But you learn. And nobody's perfect, you know. I thought a couple more when I close it out, right, at this point. Freedom versus control. This is very important, no? How much of freedom that you give is very dependent on whether they explore, they make mistakes, they develop independence, they exert control and so on. They exert themselves. Now, if you exert control, you keep them safe, you guide their behavior, but too much control, right, will stifle their development. So how do you know how they're balanced? You want them to grow up, to be leaders. Encouragement versus realism. You know, this is the tough part. You want to encourage them. Come on, you can do this. But sometimes it's real one. So my son is like, I want to be a... Just suddenly, after years, I was saying, hey, go and play sports and so on. So he, 3-4 years, don't want to play during the pandemic, don't want to do anything. Then suddenly he said, I think I want to be a professional football player. Then I look at him, you're 14, you know. Cannot, you're not going to make it. For sure. Then he's like, you're supposed to encourage me as a parent. It's like, but come on, you're 14, how? But you can try, maybe you'll be a great, good sportsman. Come. We'll encourage you to be a good sportsman. Maybe you'll be like me. When you're 50 years old, you can represent Malaysia like me, right? You finally represent Malaysia in football because all of them are being knocked out. They cannot run already. So I say by 80, I will play against the Japanese team and maybe we'll win the World Cup or be second, right? Because we know the Japanese got 80-year-old football leagues. We'll be the second. So, but I said there's a chance for us to represent Malaysia older. So you keep being fit. But how do you balance realism and encouragement? Sometimes we don't do either very well. Being a parent, being a friend, you need to be the authority figure, yet, and set rules and boundaries, but they want to bond. They want to be close. Wow, this is a very tough one, you know. How do you do both and do it well? So you need to know when's the time to intervene as a friend, especially when they have problems with their girlfriend, boyfriend, things. Intervene as a friend, and when is it when you're authority figure, set boundaries, accountability, discipline, and so on and so forth. Present focus versus future preparedness. Parent must take care of their children's immediate needs, but you also need to make them want to figure out their own future and balance that. So sometimes you need to pull out and say you have to take care of your own needs so that you can equip them for the future. Uniformity versus individual. Every child is different. Every child must be treated differently. And sometimes they want to be treated equally. Sometimes they don't want to be treated. But we need to know when to. And that's why it's very hard, no? There's no right answer, no? Protectiveness versus resilience. You naturally want to protect them from harm. But remember, when you protect them, they don't develop resilience. And finally, teaching values versus encouraging open-mindedness. And to me, instilling values, right? There are certain things that no compromise on. But then this world is, you know, we fight. They hate... They always fight with me. The biggest fight we always have is on generative AI. You old people, he always tell my kids will tell me, you and your generative AI, blah, blah, blah. You know, it's unethical. Wow, they're very clever to talk to you. No? This is a 12-year-old and a 15-year-old. The ethics, you know. Wow, they give me a lot of lectures because I use a lot of generative AI in the things I do. But we have those dialogue. But there are certain things that, no, I don't care. This is our family value. And you need to live it. You need to own it. You need to act it. But, you know, you need to know how to draw the line. And you know, these are all biblical principles, you know. Train up a child in the way he should go. Even when he's old, he will not depart from it. But even when he's old, right, they have to, it implies what, you know, it implies you have to let them go to make their own decisions. You cannot keep being their parent forever. In this world, you will have trouble. But take heart. I have overcome the world. There's hardship, you know. Your children need to understand that. They need to understand. Fathers, wow, again, fathers, I don't know why we are the brunt of provoking children, I think. Fathers, do not provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in discipline and instruction of the Lord. And I do that a lot. I provoke my children a lot. But lucky I got my wife. She'll go there and then she'll come back. Hey, don't lah. Go and keep talking to them about this. You always make him angry. Oh, okay. Last night, sorry, I can't one, right? Discipline your son and he will give you rest. He will give you delight in your house. You discipline them now so that you can rest later. Many parents are late in life, also not resting because their children is all over. cannot rest. There are different kinds of gifts, but the same Spirit distributes them. There are different kinds of service, but the same Lord. There are different kinds of working, but all of them in everyone is the same God at work. And to me, individual, encourage them to be individual, but be collective in their love of the Lord, in the work of the church, in the way they go about living their Christian life. Protectiveness was considered pure joy, my brothers and sisters, whenever you face trial of many kinds, because you know the testing of your faith produces perseverance, let perseverance finish its work so that you may mature and complete, not lacking anything. And finally, then we no longer will be infants, tossed back and forth by the waves, blown here and there by every wind of teaching and by the cunning and craftiness of the people in their deceitful scheming. Instead, speaking the truth in love, we will grow to become in every respect the mature body of Him who is ahead, that is Christ. So you've got to teach your kids. And you got to figure out. And I didn't like it when I was young. My father will insist on a certain time. Bible study this time. Right? So to me, one of the things my wife does, I think pretty well, is like she will go before they sleep and talk and teach each one individually, do the word. They sleep slightly different times. And then enable them to understand what God is telling them and then put them to bed. And they love it. I mean, they like that thing. But as they grow older, it's like, don't. All right? So then you have to figure out a different process and a different ritual. Every family should have rituals. I'm going to end with one final story now, and I'll close here. So I remember this story because another story I picked up, which is a true story. So there was a police academy and they were having an exam. So police academy is where they train police officers. And so these police officers were being trained and the examiner said, okay, we're going to discuss this in groups. And he bring them out in small groups. And he said, okay, here's the scenario. You're a police officer wearing uniform. You walk and you saw a robbery happening in a retail store right across there. Now, while that is happening, suddenly there's a car accident in front of you, in the road in front of you. And then while that is happening, you see a snatch thief happening right there. Some guy come and snatch and take a woman's purse and run. And then he put another, I can't remember, three or four other things all happening at the same time. You're the only police officer. What would you do? And you realize because of the accident, groups of people are coming and fighting. So there's like a whole mob coming about. And so they were discussing it. And finally, one of the groups said, okay, here's what we do. We go inside the retail store. We take out a police uniform, wear whatever shirt that was there, pretend to not be a police officer and just walk out. Their problem. Right? And then, of course, it was funny, right? But I think many times in life, we are like that, no? When we have children, we have chaos everywhere. What? We have this happening and this happening and this happening. And the easiest thing is saying, okay, I just want to take off my parent uniform and just, I just need some peace. Pass it. It's wife's problem, mate's problem, whose problem, don't care. It's not my problem. But I think God called us to not give up, no? God called us to remain and solve that one problem, solve another problem, solve another problem, solve another problem. And ultimately, you will bring up children in the way of the Lord. And ultimately, your children will make a difference to the trajectory of the world and make a difference to where we are. And so we need parents that will not take off their uniform, will not blend with the crowd, but will continue to go in the way of the Lord. I'll end with this verse. Do not let us grow weary of doing good, for in due season we will reap if we do not give up. So I wish you all the best in your parenting. I want to just close with a short word of prayer and pass the time back. Heavenly Father, we want to pray for PJFC, Lord. We want to pray for the congregation. We want to pray for the many children, the many parents. We want to ask you, Lord, that you give them the power to continue, the encouragement, Lord, the boldness, the ability to understand context, Lord, the ability to make the right decisions at the right time, at the right place, Lord, and the ability to bring up children, Lord, that are God-fearing, but also that children will be leaders that will be transformative to our nation, Lord. Children that will dare to stand up, Lord. Children who will go out there and glorify your name in many, many different ways, Lord. So we pray for this church and we ask for special blessings on them. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.
You have been listening to a sermon from PJEFC. We hope that you have been blessed by the message. For more sermons, please go to www.pjefc.org/sermons. Love God, love people, and make disciples.